Michael Pischke? Wonderful.
Well, happy Sabbath, everyone. Nice to be here with you all. My parents are here visiting, and it's always nice to have them here. And if you haven't had an opportunity to meet them, today's your opportunity. They are way nicer than I am. I'd like to think that if there's good in me, they are largely responsible for that. I guess if there's things in me that aren't so good, I tend to blame them for that as well, because it's just easier that way for me. I think my dad shared with me on the way down here from Alexandria that they discussed in the car that whatever happens today, whatever happens, that they decided that they would not boo me. So I thought that was kind of nice. I had a busy week, and I neglected to get my sermon title into the bulletin, so I apologize for that. But today I want to talk about honey and milk. Honey and milk. You know, a while ago I started a food reserve of dehydrated food packets and things like that, just to plan for what if. I am not here to encourage or discourage you from doing the same. The point is that part of this food reserve is honey. Now, we're told in Mark chapter 1 and verse 6 that John the Baptist's diet was locusts and honey. So to go with my honey stockpile, I considered starting my own locust colony in my backyard, but thought the neighbors might have me locked up. Now, bees are an unclean animal. So don't eat bees, people. If any of you are now thinking of a tasty bee sandwich right now, stop. Yet what bees produce is clean. So in the context of clean and unclean, this is perhaps a unique example of where we can ingest the product of an unclean animal. I'm having a hard time thinking of another example. A webpage I found listed 5 things that you did not know about honey. All right, number 1, it's an excellent cough medicine. I actually remember my mom giving us a spoonful of honey when we had sore throats as kids. I much preferred that to when she brought out the iodine or mercurochrome when we had a cut or an abrasion. And if you don't know what mercurochrome is, that's okay. Most people under 40 have probably not heard that word before. And for you young people, consider that a blessing. It, when it was applied to a wound, it stung worse than a bee. Well, number 2 is honey can treat wounds. Well, had I known that back then, I would have secretly disposed of the mercurochrome bottle in the medicine cabinet. But I do consider that having sticky goo pasted over an abrasion would have its own downsides. Well, number 3, honey improves your scalp. Now, I had thought that it would be the nutrients in honey, and not that one should pour a gob of honey on your head. It would seem to me that honey applied directly to the scalp would introduce a series of problems greater than the benefits one would receive from it. But there aren't really any nutrients in honey, just sugars. So it would actually have to be applied to your head. No thanks. All right, number 4. Honey helps boost energy. The glucose in honey is absorbed by the body quickly and gives immediate energy, while the fructose is absorbed more slowly, providing sustained energy. However, manly men aggressively gnawing on a thick energy bar may have trouble switching over to delicately squeezing honey out of a cute little honey bottle like this. And as our prop expert, Mr. Wickman, was that an effective use of a prop here? Good, I got a thumbs up there. All right, number five. Honey reduces allergy symptoms. Now, it has been shown that a person who eats local, and that's the key, local honey, that they are thought to be ingesting local pollen that the bees have utilized. The idea is that over time, a person may become less sensitive to this pollen. Yeah, makes sense. So there you go. Five things that go in the plus column for honey. And while I suppose having honey in a food reserve has these five additional benefits, it's in my emergency food stash because it can last forever. It does not spoil, unless you add water to it or leave it uncovered so it absorbs moisture. Modern archaeologists excavating ancient Egyptian tombs have often found pots of honey amongst the tomb's artifacts. The honey is thousands of years old, yet still preserved. So it looks like the Egyptians had honey in their food reserves too, like me. But in researching this, they seem to think bees were sun worshippers. And they had a deity that was a priestess of bees. So I think my similarity with the ancient Egyptians is very limited. Okay, so when we think of honey, we think of a thick liquid, but it can be a solid. If the honey is not filtered and processed and still retains royal jelly and beeswax, it's more in a solid state, according to beepollenbuzz.com. And if you think of biblical times, there wouldn't have been any large sous-vide honey factories around. So I'd like you to keep in your mind that we can kind of think of honey as a solid food, and that'll make some sense later. Now, milk is a pretty fascinating product. It is a naturally occurring liquid that contains a wide range of nutrients, including calcium and protein. Milk is the best natural substance to feed and strengthen our bones. In fact, a child's skeleton through cell reproduction is replaced about every 2 years, which is why milk is so important for infants. When I found another website listing five things that you did not know about milk, I either did know these things or the facts were fairly underwhelming. So let's move on to something more substantial, our Bibles. Leviticus 20. If you want to join me in Leviticus 20, we'll read verse 24. So Leviticus 20 and verse 24. Leviticus 20 and verse 24. But I have said to you, you shall inherit their land, and I will give it to you to possess, a land flowing with milk and honey. I am the Lord your God, who has separated you from the peoples. Now this phrase, a land flowing with milk and honey, is probably embedded into our memories. One of the reasons for this is that I found 21 times in the Bible where the phrase milk and honey is used, from Exodus to Ezekiel. Now, we all understand that a land flowing with milk and honey implies that pastures are fertile and abundant for livestock to flourish. And if you are a fan of alliteration, here goes. We would also understand that fruit trees and plants propagated, providing pollen and plentiful portions for bees to prosper. It's a good or favored land, in other words. But why didn't God describe the promised land as a land full of gold or treasure or beautiful, majestic mountains or landscapes? I mean, there are some areas on the planet where jewels and precious ores and minerals are abundant. And there are some pretty spectacular landscapes and scenery out there. I mean, if you ever have the chance to attend the feast in Canmore, Canada, I mean, you'll just see an example of the awesome beauty of creation. And while you may think that gold or jewels are more of man's idea of a bountiful land and not God's, consider the elements for the temple that King David had gathered. If you want to join me in 1 Chronicles 22, we'll read verse 14. So 1 Chronicles 22 and verse 14. First Chronicles 22 and verse 14 reads, "Indeed, I have taken much trouble to prepare for the house of the Lord 100,000 talents of gold and 1 million talents of silver and bronze and iron beyond measure, for it is so abundant." 100,000 talents of gold is almost 4,000 tons. 4,000 tons. Now, Fort Knox holds about twice this amount. But consider modern-day mining techniques that would have been used to mine this gold compared to how gold would have been procured in or before David's time. And the silver here was over 37,000 tons. That's a cube of silver over 48 feet in length, height, and width. In looking at the dimensions of this large space we are in, I would say that the amount of silver identified here in the Bible would not fit inside this room. There was an astonishing amount of gold and silver prepared for God's temple. There is no mention of milk and honey being part of the preparations. But God did not describe the promised land as a land abundant with gold, silver, or jewels. He said the land was flowing with milk and honey. Honey and milk seem like basic, simple things. They seem unworthy of prominence. If we were promised blessings of honey and milk, we'd probably go, gee, thanks. But, you know, perhaps we should have a better reaction than that if God was even giving us a simple thing. But, I mean, would we really leap for joy? And why didn't God say a land abundant with waters for pastures and ample fruits and flowers? I mean, why didn't he describe the promised land like that, which is really what a land flowing with milk and honey implies? God specifically used the term milk and honey, and he used it a lot, 21 times. Now, I researched the term milk and honey and how it is used in the Bible, and found some very different opinions out there, even some strange perspectives from biblical scholars. These scholars pointed out that in a lot of cases there's an erotic and sexual connotations to go with milk and honey, using the Bible itself to support a very pagan explanation for why milk and honey are used in Scripture. Now, we won't turn there, but here's an example used to support such a position. It's from Song of Solomon. It's chapter 4 and verse 11, which reads, "Your lips, O my spouse, drip as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garments is like the fragrance of Lebanon." So milk and honey is, to some, a very pagan, earthly reference. It is also documented that Egyptians used milk and honey in their religious rituals. Well, since the Israelites lived in Egypt for a long time, the Israelites likely would have been aware of this. So, did God use this phrase, milk and honey, to help Israel better understand his promises to them by conforming to pagan ideas of these products? Did God want Israel to understand that Mother Earth, as many pagan peoples would look at it, would provide sustenance for Israel? I think we disagree with these perspectives, even in the face of the qualifications that were stated for these biblical scholars who support such a perspective. I mean, after all, there were a lot of academic letters listed after their names, but they're missing the point. To start with, Leviticus 2 and verse 11. If you want to join me in Leviticus 2, we'll read verse 11. Leviticus 2 and verse 11. No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven, for you shall burn no leaven nor any honey in any offering to the Lord made by fire. Now we talk a lot about leavening, but why was honey here forbidden? Matthew Henry's commentary points out that too much honey is bad, and it references Proverbs 25, verse 16 and verse 27 in that chapter. And that to pagans, honey is associated with sexuality. Well, God is disassociating his ways with paganism here by forbidding the use of honey with offerings. Next, think of the context of Israel's situation. They were embarking on a new beginning, leaving Egypt, and starting a new life following God's ways. They were spiritual infants. Milk is necessary for new life. Well, from human babies to animals common in the herds of Israel, milk is what new life needs, and it is all that it needs. But God's plan was for Israel to prosper and grow. Milk, its nutrients necessary for the infant and used throughout life, coupled with honey, a sustenance that would last forever, was a fitting metaphor in how God described the promised land. So think of that. Milk is needed for new life and throughout life, and honey can last forever. But more so, milk and honey point to our Savior. Now I find this interesting. Join me in Isaiah chapter 7. This is one of the many prophecies of Jesus in the Old Testament. Isaiah 7, we'll read verses 14 through 15. This Emmanuel prophecy actually uses milk and honey. Isaiah 7, and starting in verse 14. Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. Curds and honey he shall eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good. Curds or butter or at the root milk and honey Christ shall eat, in order to refuse the evil and choose the good. Now it is interesting that God chooses to use curds or milk and honey in this way. Do honey and milk have special ingredients that would guide Jesus the Christ in making proper choices? And by extension, would these special attributes of milk and honey have helped ancient Israel and would help us all to this day? Well, no. Twice in the New Testament, the people were admonished for still needing milk and not solid food. These New Testament people did need milk, as we all do when we start out, but they were not progressing. Let's look at the first example of where milk and solid food is used. That's in 1 Corinthians 3 and verses 1 through 2. If you want to join me in 1 Corinthians 3, we'll read verses 1 and 2. First Corinthians 3, starting in verse 1. And I, brethren, could not speak to you as to spiritual people, but as to carnal, as to babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with solid food, for until now you were not able to receive it, and even now you are still not able. Now, while we are all familiar with this milk versus solid food analogy, The second example in the Bible is quite interesting. It is in Hebrews, if you want to join me in Hebrews chapter 5. Now, this second example is what I think is remarkable in that it provides evidence of how the Bible is astonishingly cohesive or tied together. Now, there were 39 or 40 men who wrote the 66 books of the Bible. This varying number, 39 or 40, depends on the author of Hebrews. If it was Paul or Luke, then there were 39 different men. But some think that Barnabas or Apollos may be the author, which would yield 40 different men. But God indeed is the true and sole author of the Bible. This cohesiveness is demonstrated over and over in the Bible. And it is also here in this example. In Hebrews 5, we'll read verses 13 through 14. So in Hebrews 5, starting in verse 13. For everyone who partakes of only milk is unskilled in the word of righteousness, for he is a babe. But solid food belongs to those who are full of age, that is, those who by reason of use have their senses exercised to discern both good and evil. Now, note the end of verse 14, where the author of Hebrews points out that solid food leads to the ability to discern both good and evil. After babies are weaned, they move on to solid food. They grow, they progress, they mature. As we all progress in God's ways, we gain wisdom and understanding of right and wrong. Now, we won't turn there, but there's a progression, an example for us of this progression, which we find in Luke 2 and verse 52, which reads, "And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and men." In other words, as we progress, we follow the example of Christ and become more Christ-like. That is the primary goal of any Christian, right? To become more like Christ. But see how the example from Hebrews 5:14 ties into the Emmanuel prophecy in Isaiah 7:15. Let me read Isaiah 7:15 again. Isaiah 7:15 reads, "Curds and honey he," Jesus, "shall eat, that he may know to refuse the evil and choose the good." Now we see that Emmanuel, Jesus, was to ingest curds or milk and honey to refuse the evil and choose the good. And in Hebrews, we read that moving beyond milk to solid food is needed to discern both good and evil. The Old and New Testaments just are tied so nicely together here. Now, the King James translation uses meat instead of solid food in Hebrews 5:14, and also in 1 Corinthians 3:2 in these two places that we've looked at here. In both of these places, the New Testament people were being admonished for not progressing. And such admonishment applies to all of us today as well, most certainly. My point is that honey is not what the translators should have used here. Meat is the solid food described here. But remember, we're kind of thinking of honey as also being a solid food, especially when in biblical times it was not filtered or processed. In doing so, the Emmanuel prophecy in Isaiah ties so well with Hebrews 5:14. Both places are about discerning good from evil, which starts with an introduction to God's ways with milk and a progression in his ways with solid food, which we can also identify honey as a solid food. And I think the Emmanuel prophecy in Isaiah 7:14 uses honey instead of meat, because perhaps honey is a solid food that will endure time. It can last forever. Now, of course, honey can spoil. As mentioned earlier, if honey is exposed to moisture or if it is left uncovered, it will not keep indefinitely. So you have to guard it in a sense. You have to protect honey from the elements. So too must we guard and protect what honey represents here in the Bible, sustenance and endurance. We do this by reading our Bibles regularly. We do this by following Christ's example regularly. We do this by dismissing human wisdom, which conflicts with God's wisdom, and the implementation of his ways in the examples that Christ set before us. In all that we do, we must progress. And in this progression, we equip ourselves better to refuse the evil and choose the good, as our Messiah was prophesied to do in Isaiah. And in this progression, we have our senses exercised so that we can discern good from evil, as is our instruction from Hebrews. The same message is presented to us in the Old and New Testaments. The same message is presented to us because the author is the same. Milk and honey, or rather what they represent, is needed for our introduction to God's ways and our endurance in his ways. Israel left Egypt during the Exodus. They left slavery, but more so they left the ways of man's leadership and migrated to the ways of God's leadership. To do this, they needed milk. They needed an introduction to his ways as they were spiritual infants. This came in the form of God's laws, which were to be taught as if they were children. Deuteronomy 6. You want to join me in Deuteronomy 6? We'll read verses 6 through 9. Deuteronomy 6. We will read verses 6 through 9. Deuteronomy 6, starting in verse 6. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. What God is saying here is that his ways should be taught and remembered. His laws, which were taught to Israel, can be illustrated as milk necessary for infants. And the instructions were that these laws were to be a sign on the hand, frontlets between the eyes, and written on the doorposts. His laws were to endure, to last forever. His laws were to weather and withstand everything that would happen in their lives, just as honey illustrates a solid food that endures. And as honey will spoil if it is left to the elements, if God's ways were to endure in man, Israel was to be diligent to keep and protect God's instructions. And so must we. Now, one last thing about milk and honey. These products are not man-made. We won't turn there, but in Exodus 20 and verse 25, which I'll just read here, and if you make me an altar of stone, you shall not build it of hewn or fashioned or cut stones, for if you use your tool on it, you have profaned it. In this example, God does not want man's tweaking. So while the promised land could have been described as a place of beautiful landscapes or bountiful gold mines, man can have a pretty negative impact on what God creates. The creation or formation of honey and milk, however, can't be profaned by man. So honey and milk, They were used to describe a bountiful land, yes. And God used these natural products to illustrate that Israel was at that time spiritual infants needing milk. And honey, a food that can last forever, implies continuing sustenance in God's plan stretching to eternity. While God used honey and milk to describe his promises to Israel, these two products serve well to illustrate our need for God's direction and sustenance, and our hope of his eternal promises to all of mankind. If we are beyond the point of being spiritual infants, we've outgrown the need for milk, though it was certainly necessary in our beginnings. But none of us have outgrown the need for progressing and enduring. Honey is used in the Bible to illustrate this. Many times in the Bible, God referred to the promised land as a land flowing with milk and honey. Sure, it means it's a good and favored land, but we should think of this description of the promised land in a more significant way. Milk starts everyone out in God's ways, as Israel was starting out after their Exodus, and all of us start out at some point. And honey sustains one in his ways, which was the intent for Israel after their Exodus, and the intent for us to this day. Now, I don't have powdered milk in my food reserve, though it could. It lasts about 10 years from what I see online. But I do have honey, as I don't have worries of its longevity. Whether or not you have honey in a literal food reserve, be sure it's in your spiritual food inventory. God's ways in us should endure, in other words. And you can make your own call when it comes to starting a locust colony in your backyard.